Okay, item number five, our 2013 North of Falcon policy, C3608, briefing and public hearing. And I failed to ask if there's any public input before that decision, but there was none. Welcome, Pat. John?
Good morning, Madam Chair. Members of the Commission, Director Anderson, my name is John Long, and I'm with the Fish Program, where I work on salmon and steelhead harvest management issues. And with me today is Pat Patillo from the Director's Office, and we're here to talk to you a little bit about the North of Falcon policy, your North of Falcon policy for us. You'll notice that it's a recently expired policy. It's a two-year policy. And we typically give you a briefing every year just to check in and make sure that everything's going okay, and it's adopted typically for a two-year period. And it represents your guidance to us as a Fish and Wildlife Commission. I believe we should be handing something out to you here shortly, a couple of handouts, and maybe you already have them. We'll walk through the document that you have there and discuss some key pieces, and just be aware that the policy is organized in some main headings here, and they're listed here. So we'll be taking a closer look at some of those subheadings. So you'll notice under that first heading that really this policy is an umbrella of a variety of other guidance and policies, including things like case law, the ESA, the Pacific Salmon Treaty, for example, as well as some other Fish and Wildlife Commission policies. Stepping a little further into the document, one of the first reminders we see is that we are to be consistent with the 21st Century Salmon and Steelhead Initiative, and that reminds us that we're supposed to make decisions that are science-based and well-documented, transparent, well-communicated, and accountable. And that we are to meet or exceed ESA recovery and conservation goals. A little further down, this is part of the statewide guidance. You'll see that it guides us in how fishing opportunities are provided and that we're to target our opportunities, that is, provide opportunities when they can be directed at healthy wild or hatchery stocks, and that we want to maximize fishing opportunities using selective fishing methods, and we want to use the same selective fishing methods and any other methods we can come up with to minimize impacts on depressed stocks. And further, it defines that we are not to reserve exclusively for one sector, that is commercial versus sport or the other. We're supposed to find some sort of balance there. Further on in the general and statewide section, we are to provide meaningful fishing opportunities for recreational fisheries being very different than commercial fisheries, and recreational fisheries are, we're trying to provide meaningful opportunities, that is, that anglers will like to participate in, and we want to make sure that we're distributing those opportunities across the fishing areas, in other words, across the geography, making sure that folks are enjoying opportunities throughout the state. And we want to make sure that we're reflecting the diverse interests of the anglers themselves, and we want to make sure that we're including things like catch and release fisheries and retention fisheries. There's a lot of different complexity to our angling populace out there. Moving on to the second page of that policy, you'll see that there is some more specific guidance, and it's species-specific in this particular case, and you'll see that this, the first one there talks about sockeye chum and pink salmon. and it guides us to provide the majority of the harvest to commercial interests for these three species, but at the same time, where possible, provide meaningful recreational opportunities. So there's a clear priority here for commercial fisheries on these three species, with one exception, and that is Puget Sound Origin Sockeye. There's some more prescriptive language there that you'll see in the document about Lake Washington Sockeye, for example. A little further down, some more species-specific guidance for Chinook and Coho in Puget Sound. And that is a little different than the guidance you just saw for Pink Chum and Sockeye, and that provides a clear priority for recreational fisheries for Coho and Chinook salmon in Puget Sound. And once again, being mindful to distribute those across fishing areas, across the geography. And then also to provide opportunities for commercial harvest. So that's a priority order for those sectors. Under harvest management there, a little further down, you'll notice that there is some specific guidance for some certain areas of the state, first being Grays Harbor, that there we're supposed to include opportunities for harvest for both recreational and commercial fishers. That is more of a seeking to please both sides of the sectors if possible. And in Willapa Bay, similarly, both recreational and commercial fisheries are considered as well. And with respect to that one, we want to make sure that we're being consistent with the Willapa Bay framework plan, which was developed in an advisory group process. And then a little further down, you'll see I'm skipping Columbia River, but if you jump down to the Pacific Ocean, we want to make sure, of course, to be consistent with the Pacific Fishery Management Framework Plan. Jumping back up just a little bit to the Columbia River, this is the only place that we noted that you may want to consider a change. You'll notice that the first part of this, the first sentence is, we think is likely going to be a continued guidance from you. You, of course, want us to continue to work with our Oregon counterparts in planning fisheries. But perhaps the second part of that statement might be struck. Seems like it might not be consistent with other policies that the commission is considering, and so want to bring that to your attention. And just a heads up, that is highlighted on the handout that you got, just to make sure that you are aware of it. Next subheading is the in-season management subheading. And of course, this tells us that we want to, well, for starters, the fisheries, they change a lot. We go through a preseason planning process, and it seems like something always changes. And so what this tells us is to remind us that we want to, any changes that are made in season, we want to make sure that we're being mindful of the intent when we plan those fisheries, and to involve the folks in the folks that are affected in making those decisions. Be mindful of the intent of those fisheries pre-season. A little further on, you'll notice the section about monitoring, sampling, and enforcement. This is a good reminder that we need to be considering all three of these aspects as we plan our fisheries. We don't want fisheries that are not adequately monitored, sampled, or enforced. These are very important elements for fishery planning, and so it's a reminder to us, guidance to us, to make sure that we're being mindful of those. Stepping a little further in, I believe this is on your third page of the policy. It talks about gear and fishery conflicts. Obviously, we'd like to minimize gear and fishery conflicts as much as we possibly can. Sometimes these take the form of commercial versus sport. Sometimes they're within sectors of commercial or even sectors of sport. And so we're trying to make sure that we minimize those to the degree possible. And we want to make sure that we're involving the appropriate sport and commercial representatives as we go throughout the in-season process. Should a need to address this arise, we want to make sure that we're involving the right people to make the right decisions. A little further down in your document there is the section on incidental mortalities. You've directed us to minimize mortalities on non-target species, including things like rockfish and seabirds. And with respect to seabirds specifically, we're to include strategies to limit seabird mortalities consistent with the Federal Migratory Bird Act.
Commissioner Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've read here recently significant discussion about the impact of, say, cormorants and other things on fish going down the Columbia River as an example. How does this relate to that? It seemed to me like there seems to be a significant impact on the recovery of the fish based on those birds. And is there a priority, or how is that being considered?
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm not aware of a priority. It's definitely a minefield trying to navigate. You've got, in some cases, ESA-listed salmonids, and then you've got protected bird species that we have to figure out ways to marry those two competing interests together. But I don't know that we've resolved that at this point in time. I don't know of a clear guidance to us on who wins the argument. I suspect that we're probably we're going to be looking for ways to address concerns from both sides of that equation.
Thank you.
Do you have a comment on that too, Pat?
Thank you, Commissioner Perry. The for example, we had a meeting recently with folks from the Columbia River and ocean fishery groups, mainly, that were we talked about the decline or the concerns for the abundance of coho salmon in the ocean, because hatchery production in particular from the Columbia has been very poor in recent years, and so the ocean fisheries and lower Columbia River fisheries have suffered from that. And one of the possible reasons for that is factors affecting coho production is cormorants. And we didn't really think that this North of Falcon policy addressed that issue, but we are trying to incorporate any factors such as cormorants into predictions or into the, especially the long-term concerns or addressing long-term problems in production. We're aware of that. But I think it's correct to say that this North of Falcon policy does not address that particular issue in that context.
Thank you.
Commissioner Director Anderson, you want to add something?
We have had issues with seabird mortalities, particularly in the Puget Sound gillnet fishery. And U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service also got involved in this issue, I want to say 15 years ago, maybe 20.
94.
Okay, 18 and a half years ago. We changed the, we added a provision and a requirement for a type of netting at the in the top section of gill nets to help alleviate interactions with seabirds. And that's largely been successful from our observations. However, there have been times, one in particular that I can think of, south of Jefferson Head in Apple Tree Cove and in that area, where we did see, from my perspective, an unacceptable level of seabird interactions in our gillnet fishery. Murrelets, auklets, those species that are preying on forage fish in areas where folks are fishing gill netting for salmon in particular concern. And so we were not accepting that the net material that I'm not recalling the name of it, that was put in the upper section of the gill net to reduce interactions, that we could just ignore that fixed the problem. Our recommendation has been and continues to be that we have this provision in the policy, that we continue, and we've actually ramped up our monitoring of the gillnet fishery in recent years to look at potential interactions with non-target species, including seabirds. So there's a little bit of history there. I think the issue that Commissioner Perry brings forward in terms of the cormorants and Caspian terns in particular in the lower Columbia River is an important but kind of separate issue relative to the basis and the premise for having this element in the policy.
Commissioner Carpenter was next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just, I think, for purposes of a little more clarification, the North of Falcon policy, as I recall, applies to Puget Sound. And you're talking, Commissioner Perry, about the Columbia River. But real briefly, in my pre-commission life, I was asked by some constituents in the lower river to try and engage with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, who, as my understanding, is the overriding entity that deals with the Migratory Bird Act. And I personally made three calls to the regional staff of U.S. Fish and Wildlife to try and get some discussions started. For whatever reason, was totally unsuccessful in getting any response. And I don't know what might have happened since with other people, but that was my experience.
Thank you.
Commissioner Jennings?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess sticking a little bit with gill nets in the top section, I, in my previous life before I became a commissioner, I actually was one of the Audubon representatives back in the mid-90s dealing with the seabird bycatch issue, and the result being that the top baffle, the top panel of the three panel gill net, that each individual block was made larger to reduce the chance of entanglement. And as part of that, I got to go out on a couple of boats to see how it was working, to see what the different techniques. And it did seem to reduce seabird bycatch from previous net types. But I was struck on the boats that I was on, and it was a very small sample size. I'm not saying it's representative all around, but we were catching 10 to 12 dogfish for each salmon landed. And dogfish don't even start breeding until they're 20. They have, you know, one or two pups a year at most. So I actually have a lot of conservation concerns still remaining about gill nets in the Columbia, in the Puget Sound area. I don't have the data. I just have a concern. So I'm happy to hear that we're doing more monitoring of bycatch for the gill nets. But I do think it's still an area of concern. And going back, when I look at the first page under Fisheries Management General, and it starts off, you know, on the first bullet, fishing opportunities will be provided. To me, what's lacking here, and I don't think it's, I'm not saying it's targeted to salmon, I'm saying as a generic statement we should have for many of these policies where we have these general bullets, is that conservation is a paramount objective for the establishment and implementation of management objectives for state and fish and wildlife resources. And so we want to make sure that our active management doesn't impair conservation efforts. And that's really not reflected in here. And even though we have this section that says incidental mortalities, all it says is minimize mortalities. It doesn't really address the performance standard of limiting mortality to non-conservation concern levels, or I mean, I don't have the language to suggest for it. I'm just bringing this up as a concept for us to think about. But as it is now, if I tried to come back and say, how do you, what does that minimize mortalities mean? There's no metrics around how to evaluate, are we being effective or not, without having some tie back into conservation objectives or impacts to non-incidental populations. So, so I guess, and if, I'm not sure what we're doing today. Are we adopting this? Are you just briefing us to look at it, to come back and adopt it later? And if so, I'll try and put some thought into maybe the language that we could add into that first bullet or add another bullet there.
Yeah, the last slide, once I get there, we'll be proposing this to be adopted at your next meeting for a two-year period. But in response to some of your conservation concern questions, obviously, you could put more specific guidance in there to be that would include the language you're talking about. However, I as one of the fishery manager, I see that as ongoing guidance. That if you've got an issue about bycatch or depressed stock or whatever, if you've got a conservation concern, you better do something about it. And I like to think that we do follow that guidance, whether it's written or not. And the example that Director Anderson brought up about seabirds in the Indianola area. We did take action. We closed that area to non-treaty fishers. We do have the requirement for opaque mesh, the top 20 meshes in gillnet fisheries, and those sorts of things. We are certainly interested in perpetuating those kind of conservation goals wherever they arise.
That's great, because I think, and we'll be talking about it this afternoon, but, you know, when I see a bycatch rate of 22, you know, non-targeted species for each landed individual that we're targeting, that to me does raise conservation concerns, and so it's really nice to see that we will probably be changing some policies to address those.
Okay. Thanks. Any other? Okay. You can continue. Get
okay,
to your last
great.
Slide.
almost there. You'll see here, and it's still on the third page of the policy, that gives us some guidance about how we do communications with the public and how we run the North of Falcon planning process. It asks us to include participants as observers where we can during appropriate state-tribal discussions of fisheries issues, and we're to maintain timely records of those discussions and decisions, and we're asked to use a variety of communication tools. For your information, we'll be using a website again this year where we post a lot of technical information, forecasts, fisheries that are being considered, those kinds of things, and that's a very actively used tool in our toolbox, and not least of which, you should also have received a handout with the public meetings, and I believe Pat will speak a little bit more about those public meetings at the end of this presentation. So the very last part there on your handout, you'll see the crux of the policy, and that is the delegation of authority to the director to make agreements and negotiate those agreements with the Northwest Treaty Tribes and other government agencies, and to adopt permanent and emergency regulations resulting from those negotiations. So getting to your point, Commissioner Jennings, we are proposing that you adopt some form of this policy at your next meeting for a two-year period, so it would terminate at the end of December 2014, and we'd be glad to field any further questions. And well, actually, maybe Pat, you wanted to say something specifically about the meetings.
I think Director Anderson has something.
Pat, okay. I don't want to jump ahead of you. I wanted to speak to the Grace Harbor piece a little bit.
Oh, go ahead.
So you'll see on page 2 of the document, second bullet under Chinook Coho, very general language that has to do with Grace Harbor. And Grace Harbor is, over time, has turned into a pretty difficult fishery to manage. Kurt Hughes is here and is up to his elbows in that fishery as we go through the North Falcon process and in season. And one of the reasons it makes it more difficult, I guess, is The recreational fishery has a number of different components to it. It has a component that likes to fish in the estuary down in the Johns River area. It has a component that likes to fish further up off the banks. It has a component that likes to fish in tributaries like the Hump Tulips. When we talk about designing a management plan for that, there's a number of different interests, even within the recreational sector, that we need to consider. Of course, we also have a commercial fishery there, so there's an allocation component between the recreational and commercial. We have the Quinault Indian Nation has usual and custom fishing areas in Grace Harbor, so we have that piece to contend with. We have, I believe there's seven kind of primary tributaries that feed into Grace Harbor itself. And so it's pretty complex. And up until 2005 timeframe, we really didn't, kind of went into every session almost with a blank slate, every North Falcon session. And the user groups and we did battle to get to a point of a management plan at the end of the day. And so we wanted to provide some more structure to that, some more stability to it. And so we undertook in 2005 the development of a Grace Harbor management plan. And it's ended up, it's based on a matrix. From an allocation perspective, it has trigger points and the sharing between the sport fishery and the commercial fishery changes. There are some specifics relative to harvest objectives for the different components of the sport fishery. There had been an issue about whether we were managing the matrix based on the total abundance of Grace Harbor as a whole, or whether we were going to break out Chehalis River system separate from Hump Tulips, which are the two primary areas where the fish originate. We made a change in 2009 that broke that out. So the matrix has a Chehalis component and a Hump Tulips component, both a Chinook and Coho, and for both those components. Now, it has conservation objectives in it. Some of the... Kurt, you might have to help me. Some of the language isn't real prescriptive. Darn it.
There's a tiered process for...
Commission. Director Anderson captured it quite nicely. The tiering process was originally developed as a component of the larger plan in about 2007, modified in 2009, as Director Anderson indicated. And what it does is it separates Hump Tulips from Chehalis for purposes of essentially allocating the abundance as those fish, those stocks are returning into the bay, so that we're managing for those independent conservation objectives. And I think that's what he was trying to finish saying there. But it does identify at different levels of abundance by stock of origin, Hump Tulip Chehalis, the level of commercial harvest that would take place, and the level of recreational opportunity that would be provided. And it, at its lowest levels of abundance, intends to provide fairly conservative, but as much opportunity on the recreational sector as possible, and that at the highest levels of abundance provides much more opportunity for commercial harvest to take advantage of those larger abundances.
Very good. Commissioner Schmidt?
Chair, I'll see if there's any questions before I ask a new...
Oh, this is a new topic?
New topic.
Okay, anything on Grace Harbor? Pat, were you going to say?
I think there was a reason why Director Anderson brought this up, and it's to simply, he was not going to recommend new language, I don't believe, and we talked about it just a little bit before the meeting, but he wanted to make sure that it was clear that there is quite a bit of input from this framework for Grace Harbor that we use, this tiered plan. And so making you aware that in this case, that very general specification was, we had guidance that was far more detailed and had gone through a significant process with the public to be developed.
Okay, thanks for that clarification. Commissioner Schmitten?
Thank you, Chair. And John and Pat, excellent job in boiling down in three pages, extremely complex process. But I think you may have missed other species when you went through the presentation. And the only reason I noted that is I had a question on that. You know, why don't I let you introduce it, then I'll ask my question.
We did talk a little bit about this, and it specifically talks about sturgeon management and references one of your commission policies to us. And in our thinking, we thought, well, it seems that you've given us the guidance. You're directing us to use the guidance that is found in that other policy, and that's the way we were viewing it.
My question then, more specific, is it references coastal sturgeon fisheries. I was unaware that we had coastal sturgeon fisheries. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, and if you'd like more details, I'm sure Kurt will assist me. But there are sturgeon fisheries, commercial sturgeon fisheries, and recreational sturgeon fisheries in Willapa Bay and Grays Harbor. And you probably are aware there are some in some recreational fisheries in Puget Sound as well, although they're small. But there are fisheries that occur in all three of those areas, and they are guided by the commission policies that are referenced here, and they work with, since they're largely Columbia River origin, they work with those folks as well in planning those fisheries.
That was helpful, and I was aware of Grace Harbor and Willapa. I was trying to get at, was there actually offshore fisheries, and apparently not.
Yeah, the word coastal problem.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I have a question. Going back, well, I did want to ask about Willapa. Has the framework been completed? Because last I heard, it was still under development.
I'll go ahead and field that one. Thank you, Commissioner Wecker. Yes,
for the record, you didn't introduce yourself when you first started talking. This is audio, so if you could just do that for people who might listen to the tape later.
Sure. For the record, my name is Kurt Hughes. I'm the Region 6 Fish Manager. I work out of the Montesano Regional Office, and as such have management authority for the coastal region where we're discussing Willapa Bay, Grace Harbor. So, Willapa Management Plan, as we initiated development in summer of 2000 with the advent of our Willapa Salmon Advisory Group, a draft was completed in January of 2010. Like the Grace Harbor Management Plan, it's still in a draft format. We're operating under the general guidelines that are created through the consultation with our advisory group to kind of work out the difficulties of complex management which occurs within those two systems, Willapa Bay and Grace Harbor. I do anticipate at some point, once we've had, like with in 2005, the initiation of the Grace Harbor Management Plan, revisions in 2007, subsequent revisions to the matrix in 2009, I anticipate some of those same sorts of things as they arrive at our doorstep in north of Falcon Management, that we will address those through the advisory group to try and come to an adaptively managed scenario that provides us with a plan that covers our needs. And largely those are conservation needs as well as opportunity. And so like the Grace Harbor plan, both being in a draft status, operational for our purposes, we will at some point be bringing those to the commission for public review and approval by the commission for finalizing them within the management framework.
Great, thanks. Excuse me. I have one other question which you may or may not be ready to answer. I did attend North of Falcon 1 year and understood the complexity of the negotiations. This is, I guess, a two-part question. Looking at our draft Columbia River policy, will there still be issues to work out among the stakeholders if we set, you know, allocation, impact allocation expectations or catch allocation expectations? If we give you that specific formula for the dividing up the harvest, will there still be seasons to define that you would do collaboratively?
Good. Chair Wicker, the answer is yes. Columbia River is and the fisheries connection to North of Falcon is a little bit odd in that we never address spring Chinook, for example, because it's just the annual sequence of things. North of Falcon is an annual process for the most part, and we start in February or so, and it's already past time for planning those fisheries for the year for spring Chinook. Summer Chinook, though, has discussions that go on in our public meetings and is timely with respect to the North of Falcon process. And so very definitely in that case, North of Falcon meetings that are held, public meetings that are held in the Columbia River region for Columbia River fisheries will incorporate the summer Chinook fisheries, or even to some degree the sockeye fisheries. And I'll mention something else about that, the planning for that in a moment. The fall Chinook fisheries or fall coho fisheries, there's quite an extensive discussion about those fisheries, because not only is the allocation issue large and significant within the river, but it's a very important balance that we attempt to strike each year between the outside and inside, meaning the ocean fisheries and the river fisheries. The reliance, the heavy reliance on coho and Chinook opportunities, so limited by ESA or other conservation, primarily conservation-driven constraints, it makes that a tough one. That is probably the fall fisheries, fall stocks, is the majority of our discussion about the Columbia River fisheries with respect to allocation. So to the extent that the Commission's policy affects falls, it has a greater effect in North of Falcon. Summers, lesser. Spring, little to none. I hope that's helpful.
Mm-hmm. And one question or one comment that I heard from the Gillnetters a couple weeks ago was that they're feeling that it's very difficult to predict when the seasons will start, and they need to buy nets. So when do you normally know when the season will begin for, say, the summer and the fall fisheries? Is it at the end of North of Falcon when PFMC blesses things?
It is really at the end of the North of Falcon process. I might introduce the schedule, and it might be helpful here.
All right.
Would that be all right?
Yes.
So you have a handout here with a sideways version of a number of scheduled meetings for the 2013 North of Falcon process. So this is addressed by your guidance to us to set up a process that's successful in terms of public communication and the access to the consideration by the agency of its regulations for each year. So the North of Falcon process that's been developed since 1984, it's gone through many changes in the how we address this. We have far more meetings now than we've ever had, even 5 years ago. We have many more. This is just the major, a set of the major meetings, kind of the framing up of the North of Falcon process is done by looking at the Pacific Fishery Management Council, two meetings, one in the March, early March, March 6th through the 11th this year, and thankfully locally, Tacoma. The final meeting, what we describe at the very bottom there as the final decisions for all fisheries, it's really not just a Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting. It is in Portland, and that's a little bit more local than California some years. So April 6th through 11th, we'll make those decisions, but it's really not just the council, it's the North of Falcon meeting. Sometimes we have been to these final week of meetings at PFMC, and I've never even seen the council through the whole week, and we're in the same hotel because we're buried in the back rooms with the tribes negotiations, as many of you know. Within that, the kind of sandwich of North of Falcon is a whole series of public meetings, and we've labeled them, identified which ones are available for the public. The tribal meetings are not open to the public, and that references the guidance that you have to us to try to get as much of an openness to that as is possible, given the limitations and the sort of privacy of those negotiations with government-to-government engagements with the state and the tribes. We have regional meetings. We have meetings that are specifically bring up Grace Harbor and Willapa meetings, and there are more than just this one on March 29th that's identified. There are some in early March. There are Columbia River Ocean meetings in early March. There are sessions that are actually occurring before March 1st with advisors that we have for ocean, recreational, and commercial fishers. We have set up advisory meetings prior to March 1st for very early scoping of potential fishery options for this year for recreational fisheries in Puget Sound. We have meetings with the commercial sector in Puget Sound. So quite a few more meetings than this. All of those will be listed on our website. And we try to make sure that we're engaging throughout the process, reminding people that they do have another opportunity if they can't meet this one. We use our advisory group as a kind of a priority. If we can get them, the success of advisory groups is that their ability to communicate back to broader constituency. So using advisory groups, specific meetings that are open to the public, and announced if we can to get as many people coming to those as possible. So this is the set of meetings that will occur this year. And the sessions for the Columbia River meetings, there is one that will occur in during the week. It's March 25th in Vancouver, Washington, where we will have an initial, very specific scoping. We'll have the forecast. We'll have the context of allowable harvest, given the abundances of key stocks like Columbia River Fall Tule Chinook, or the status of Lower Columbia River Coho. Those are the most constraining stocks defining Lower Columbia and ocean fisheries in the last several years, and likely this year. So we'll have a better idea then, after the forecasts are available, about the size and shape of those. And initial season structures will be discussed with constituents at that time. Ultimately, then, they'll be agreed to sort of informally at the last North of Falcon April 6th or 11th meeting. Then they will be adopted through our process of the Columbia River Compact in the case of the Columbia River fisheries at subsequent meetings early in the summer.
So when would, say, Columbia River gillnetter know what mesh size they can utilize? What's the earliest season? Is it the coho run?
The earliest season, well, if you mentioned summer Chinook, and so the regulations specific to that fishery would be known and defined very likely very early in the North of Falcon process. It would be identified, and if it's a subject that is controversial, it may go further, but I think they'll have a very good idea of how to plan for that in our early North of Falcon meetings.
So this year is not going to be out of the ordinary, you think, in terms of delaying that signal?
I can't say that at this time, because I don't know what the forecasts are for those species.
Commissioner Carpenter.
I have some other comments I perhaps will make later, but I wanted to bring up one point. As you see the partial meeting schedule, and I want to ask Pat perhaps to speak to this. You know, the staff gets ramped up, and they ramp up well to get engaged in the North of Falcon process, do a lot of preparation. The public gets involved, both recreational, commercial, and tribal. And we move through a series of these meetings, and we think we're getting close, but our hands are tied until we get the documentation from Canada as far as what their abundance forecasts are. And we can't craft fisheries or establish timelines to many of these fisheries until we have the data from Canada. Pat, perhaps you could speak to that a little bit.
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner Carpenter. Director Anderson, in his role as the Washington Commissioner under the Pacific Salmon Commission, in October presented the issue of concern that we have that Commissioner Carpenter just mentioned with our understanding of how much of an effect the northern fisheries, meaning Canada and even Alaska, can have each year on the access or the limits for conservation under ESA, primarily for stocks ranging from Puget Sound to the Columbia River fall tule stock for the ocean fisheries and lower Columbia fisheries. We can be surprised, and we have been, too late in our public process to fairly consider alternatives, structures. So being surprised would be that suddenly we had a much less a number of fish for ocean quotas or to share, very disruptive in that allocation between inside and outside fisheries that I mentioned. So to prevent or to anticipate better, and make it the situation well, prevent surprises, prevent being blindsided. Director Anderson asked both the Pacific Salmon Commission and the Canadian delegation to help us with that early information. It involves the forecasts of Canadian stocks, because the mixture of Canadian stocks and U.S. stocks is the it's important to know that, and that's how we find out how much of our stocks are going to be affected, to what degree. And so the earlier we have that, the better. We got right down to specific dates, and we are hoping to hear positive news about early address of that issue. They are at least aware of that, and that helps us from being blindsided. We're hopeful that we won't have that. The April 6th through 11th final meeting is, we've definitely got to have that kind of information well ahead of that. We hope that we have that information prior to the second North of Falcon, so that week of the 26th through the 28th, having that for very specific in our models and our forecasts at that time is critical.
Okay. Is your presentation complete now?
I had one more comment, if I may. I just wanted to say, it's kind of related to what Commissioner Carpenter mentioned, that we do ramp up every year in terms of staff and effort, and it, I'm not sure if it's a frightening time of year, but it's definitely it's a success that is made by having a very strong team. We have a strong team. We have people who are more experienced, and then we've got a few rookies that are coming along, and we're excited about that. We our success very much is in spreading this out, this responsibility. Director Anderson has given me the responsibility to lead the North of Falcon team for the last several years, and it is unfair to think that it's kind of self-led, and it's, in particular, it's led by key people like John and Ron Warren and Kurt Hughes and Cindy LaFleur for Columbia River, or Guy Norman. It's very much a strong team effort, and I just want to make sure that you are aware that of the importance of that team and our success. We also will report back to you during the process after we have forecasts. We usually have a presentation during March, and of course we'll also be available to present to you, bring to you a summary of the products of North of Falcon at the culmination of the process. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Commissioner Parker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to take a moment and personally acknowledge the work ethic and the credibility that the staff brings to the table. Kurt, Steve, Kyle, Craig, obviously Pat, John, and Phil, and others that aren't here. I mean, it's a yeoman's task. Late into the night, early in the morning, I'm very respectful and certainly understand the strong effort and responsiveness put forward by the staff. I mean, I've been involved in it probably, some people think, too many years. But I just have one additional comment from somebody who's participated for a long time and probably doesn't differentiate much from what you upper managers think about it is, as it goes along with this preseason planning schedule, if we could kind of establish some kind of, for lack of a better term, rules of engagement. And when I say that, connect some really reasonably strict timelines to the progress accounting of what's being done so that we have benchmarks that we know we're making progress. And again, to bring it up Canada, we're always held back by them, but and establish the expectations early on in advance by you guys so the public knows really where the goal line is because I'll tell you, the amount of energy that staff puts into this, and that's only during the visible time of the day and when they're at these respective meetings, certainly not in their offices. And frankly, the public invests a lot of time and effort in this too. And so I just think that you folks are owed some benchmarks along the way that you know that you've met the guiding criteria from the commission. The public's involved, and I don't know how to phrase it any better than that, but I'd like the whole process to be easier on people. As we all get older, we want it easier, but yet we want a positive outcome. And so, anyway, thanks for your work.
Well, I don't want you to go away without introducing some of your compatriots back there. You've got a couple people who should be acknowledged as North of Falcon staff.
All right, well, these are two of the our right-hand and left-hand people. This is Steve Teasfeld, whose primary duties are within Puget Sound, but leads our Puget Sound section for all commercial and recreational fisheries. And Steve also is a part of the Pacific Salmon Commission. He is the alternate for the Fraser panel. And speaking of the Fraser panel, his compatriot is Kyle Addix, who works with me out of the director's office. There really is no difference between the director's office in many ways than the fish program, but in terms of what we do and our collaboration. Kyle is a lead person for me in working on. He's quite multi-talented and has not just a role in the Fraser panel as the chair of the Fraser panel, working with people like Lorraine Loomis from the Puget Sound Tribes as lead there. Kyle is co-chair with Lorraine Loomis, and Kyle then also has duties working as a lead person in developing the Puget Sound Chinook Harvest Management Plan, and annual duties of reports for that process. And Kyle is taking on new responsibilities that have, maybe Director Anderson might want to speak to, related to the Pacific Fishery Management Council. So these two fellows are definitely strong parts of the team.
I want to thank you all for your work. I did want to ask a question about staffing. One of the things that stands out when you go observe North of Falcon is the complexity, the sheer number of negotiations going on, some of which are interrelated, you know, pieced together. So can you tell us how well, I mean, compared to, say, 2008, how well we're staffed up for these? Are we have we reduced the number of our North of Falcon team? Is more work being done by fewer people?
Well, I wonder how much time you have. It's and if I could just provide a little bit of perspective on that. I am concerned, and as a person who's been doing this for a long, long time, I am concerned, and it might just be a mother hen-ish type of attitude at this point in my career, that I mentioned the rookies. I'm very happy that we've brought some new people in, for example, in under Steve with the sport fisheries in Puget Sound. We've got people that are new in Puget Sound Commercial as well, that's exciting. We have a new person working on MARC Selective Fisheries and working the data, and we have a new person that's doing modeling named Peter McHugh, who is working with Angelica Hagenbrough on our FRAM modeling that's providing just some excellent successes for us with working with the tribes in that front. So there are some examples of great success, new people. We need the new blood. But I'm afraid that we don't have enough people to take on initiative. What scares me, my perspective, is that our ability to take on new initiatives is, that would be a challenge. It is a challenge every year. I tend to want to take on new things and to go further, push the envelope, but I worry that we don't have the people with experience. And people such as Steve and Kyle and John, how thin it seems sometimes our staffing and our ability to accomplish more. To get these folks ramped up every year is just a tribute to their spirit, their dedication, and I worry about the rookies and whether or not there are enough people. There are a challenge of building enough of a bench to be successful here. We are definitely successful right now, and I worry that these might be the glory days and that the future is not as optimistic. I'll leave it there.
Okay. Director Anderson?
I don't even know if I want to try to talk again, but we've been thinking a lot about succession planning, and we've been putting a fair amount of effort into that in the last couple of months. Pat and I and Jim Scott and Michelle Culver in particular. And because one of the big differences is from 2008 is Pat and I are 5 years older. It doesn't mean much to Steve, Kyle, Kurt, and John, but for us it does. So we're looking ahead. We want to make sure that we're on solid ground. And there are some new roles, some more expanded roles for people like John and Kurt and Kyle and Steve. These guys are all... We're going to be spreading out the responsibilities that Pat and I have largely held in recent years, and I've got a great confidence they're going to step up and start taking on some of that, so we can have some consistency and some continuity as as we get on into the years here. So I share the same concerns as Pat, but we're not sitting on our hands just complaining about it. We're thinking carefully and thoughtfully about how we can make sure that we've got a solid team with succession planning as part of it.
Very good. Commissioner Jennings?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, I'm jumping back down to the weeds with a question I should have asked earlier and I didn't, and I apologize because we have been operating for the last few minutes at a little bit higher level, but I didn't want to miss the opportunity. Director Anderson, you were talking about the fact that in Puget Sound with the gillnets that modifications were done in the mid-90s for that, modifying the top panel to reduce seabird bycatch. My question is that requirement for all non-tribal gillnets operating in Puget Sound, or is that restricted to certain individual fisheries? Because I'd heard mixed answers on that. I never really did get a clear answer.
Commissioner Jennings, I think the best way to address this would be to bring to you the rules that are specific and maybe a synopsis to where it will represent different applications of rules in different regions. And it really goes back to, you had referenced, you had mentioned your experience in the mid-90s with the Sea Grant studies and the recommendations that came from Ed Melvin and others. And at that time, we, the commission, at that time adopted the rules that addressed a region-by-region application that reflected, say, concentrations of seabird interactions. So we've taken different strategies in different areas. For example, we have requirements for the use of live boxes in the San Juans, and we have different mesh or daylight hour restrictions in certain areas, and allowed avoidance of the transition time periods of the time. So the differences in strategies have not really changed since that time, but they were very important and are still thought to be effective. They are not universal across all of the areas. And then, of course, we've made other changes, as the Port Madison change that Director Anderson mentioned. So perhaps that would be a good review to provide to you a summary of the gillnet and purse seine, because both of these, they worked in concert to avoid or minimize the seabird interaction specifically in that case. Would that be...
That would be great, either to me or to the Fish Committee as a whole, or whatever works for you.
Okay.
And I'm not trying to put a big burden on you. Okay. Work through the director to ask for that. But.
Okay. I guess the last question we're left with is, how do we proceed? Are you going to propose some changes? Do we have to consider? How are we going to review what you propose to change?
The proposal that we have, I'll start by saying that it's fairly simple, but maybe too simple. That is, the next opportunity that we have is a month from now. It is expected, in the case of the Columbia River, that we may have a policy to identify, and as John's presentation pointed out, there is a place where we are likely to see a change. The discussion that we had here left me with the impression that there might be some recommendations from the commission or commissioners for making some changes. There is also, I expect, some comment today from the public on North of Falcon. We always take our North of Falcon policy guidance from you to our meetings. So last year, throughout our public meetings, the advisors, the public in general, had copies of those available, and we point out the policies that guide us. And while we have not specifically requested recommendations from the public, we will be meeting with advisory groups, as I mentioned, between now and the February Commission meeting. So we could discover some input from the public through that process too. So there are several ways, and I think the unfortunate part of this process, it seems like it should have three steps. One, we introduce the policy and remind you that this is alive and it's time for making changes, or that as the term has expired in this case. Step two would be to receive input and consider very many of these, and then finally adopt it at a subsequent session. The awkward part seems to me that we may not have enough discussion of this except for right before you would make a timely change to the policy. So I guess I'm just summarizing that by saying that we expect some changes and we will bring them to you as soon as possible. And it might be advisable to meet with, say, the Fish Committee prior to the next commission meeting to summarize what we've heard from advisors. And then we can wing it from there.
Okay, so you have, if you have any thoughts you want to contribute, we have several weeks before the next meeting, and I would say to commissioners, send your comments into Tammy with and Director Anderson, and he'll distribute them. Great, thank you. Good luck this year. Very, very good. Oh, we did want to ask if there's any public input. No one signed up, and we have completed that item of the agenda, and we can